When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Juris Johnson, welcome to the show once again. Thank you so much for making time for this. I want to apologize in advance because I woke up sick today and I'm loopy on Dayquil. So if my vibes are weird, I apologize in advance. And my voice sounds even dorkier than usual, if that's possible. So please accept my apology.
Should I go do some fucking acid to just go full loopy mode on this whole thing, or what? What are we doing here?
That, or you could maybe do some voodoo, you know, call up Azalea Banks and you know, get some like chicken bones out of her closet. I don't know.
I've been known to cast a spell or two in my time, so yeah, we could go there.
Well, before we get into it, I have lots of questions, but before we get into it, I gotta know, would you rather watch the video of Dave Ellefson from Megadeth jerking it for an hour on loop, choice number one, or behind door number two, be trapped in a room of Tool fans for an entire day?
Look, okay, I actually am going to commit the cardinal sin of saying that I actually like a couple of Tool songs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you liked the Dave Ellefson video.
No. I could go my whole life without watching that video and be very happy about it.
It was pretty impressive, to be honest. I mean, his age, like the volume.
Yeah,
I was impressed.
The amount, yeah, you know, you could make some money off of an amount that high.
This might be a silver lining, a blessing in disguise.
I would take the Tool fans, because at least, you know, I could talk to them about the 2.5 songs I actually like of Tool, you know. But there's really no winning the other one.
Okay, fair enough. Well, the main thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, sort of where you're at now in your career, that you are now independent after being on 300, the same label as Fetty Wap and Megan Thee Stallion and Young Thug. And
it was a weird move to begin with. You know, I'll admit that.
Well, I mean, if someone, you know, I mean, that's Lior Cohen's thing, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, if they want to sign you to Lior Cohen's label, then, you know, it'd be hard to say no. But let's talk through the whole thing. How you ended up on the same label as Megan Thee Stallion. So you went viral on TikTok in what, 2021?
Yep. It's about 2020, late 2020. Okay. Yeah. That was when we first, a lot has changed since we last talked in this format. Obviously, you know, we're privately friends and we've gotten to know each other over the past like couple of years. But I think the first time that we talked, I think that was literally the first time we actually ever talked. Mm-hmm. Was on the first podcast like 3 years ago or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was about when I had first gotten signed. You know, and I don't even remember if I said anything about, if we even talked about, you know, me signing to a label or anything like that. I don't remember at all.
I don't think so. This was before you did the Papa Roach and Nickelback. You had done the Nickelback thing, but you hadn't done the Papa Roach thing. That was just about to come out.
I mean, I got signed pretty fast, honestly, from Damn, you know, from the very viral, you know, video. And the way it worked was, you know, I went, but this was back in, you know, I'm talking like a fucking boomer already, but this was back in like the heyday, you know, of TikTok a few years ago, when like everybody was, labels were signing everything, you know, that was popping on TikTok. Oh, you had a viral song on TikTok, multi-million dollar record deal, like click the fucking button, sign on the dotted line. I mean, left and right. It was crazy. And
is that not happening anymore?
No, not at all. Because I think that they've gotten burned enough times where, I mean, if it's possible for a label to get burned, I guess it kind of is. But like, they've signed enough fucking dorks that actually suck, that just got lucky and went viral on TikTok, that like, oh, maybe we shouldn't just sign a person who's maybe not like an actual talented
musician,
artist or something, you know? Maybe we should think a little bit more deeply about what we're signing rather than just like whatever the first thing that's going, you know, whatever's the number one trending sound on TikTok. So, because look, you can like, yeah, a lot of sounds on TikTok are from good songs or whatever, but a lot of them are just like stupid, you know, and they're not actually made by like an artist that wants to like have a good career.
It's not. And really quickly, I also wanted to mention my Patreon. If you like what I do on YouTube and everywhere else, joining my Patreon really helps me do this full time and worry less about videos getting demonetized by YouTube or copyright claimed by labels. Patrons get all my podcasts and main channel videos early. There are members only channels in my Discord that I'm super active in. I also do giveaways. For example, I've been giving away a lot of Emo's Not Dead merch, and you can also have me review your music, artwork, or anything else. All you need to do is join my Patreon at the $10 level, and then every month I do a call for submissions. If you want me to review something, just drop it in the comments of that post, and then I will review it live on Twitch. So if any of that sounds cool to you, hit the link in the description of this video, and I appreciate your support.
It's not really a song, it's just the punchline to a joke, because the line in the song is like, my dick's so big or something.
Yeah, and who knows why, you know, it's like, and things, I've had multiple sounds go viral, and, you know, I've had sounds that I thought were gonna, could be a sound and go viral that, like, didn't get any uses, and then I've had sounds that got, like, 100,000 uses, parts of my song or whatever, that I'm like, oh, I wouldn't have chose that part, so.
Right.
And it really is, like, the luck of the draw with most viral kind of sounds, you know, and to chase that dragon anymore in 2023 is just like a lost cause, because
meaning trying as an artist trying to go viral.
Yeah, trying to get a viral sound on TikTok is so stupid, because I mean, most of the time, especially in the rock and metal world, like you look at the viral sounds that have come out of the rock and metal world in the past couple of years, and it's all from bands that have been doing this for
like 10 years.
Almost 10 years. Yeah, you got
Lord of Shore, you know, Bad Omens.
People think of Bad Omens like a new band, but they're like 8 or 9 years old already.
Yeah.
Sleep Token, all same thing. Fucking Ghost, you know, the big Ghost, a huge TikTok sound, almost like 1 million uses or something.
Right.
And band for fucking 13 years or something. Right. Like, so, you know, the way that I would now think of trying to get, I mean, it's kind of just the way I've shifted my perspective in general since being like the viral TikTok kid or whatever, is like, what really truly matters is creating actual great art and great music and building a great brand. That is what really matters. And then when the time is right, your fans will fucking make a sound part of your song go viral. Mm-hmm. When the time, when you've got the right song, when you've made great art, when you've built up a brand, it will happen. You know, that's the way it works. So we kind of got off track a little bit, but
well, for like anybody who doesn't know, you are a very, very talented musician beyond what people may have heard. I mean, like I've said before, you can play every instrument better than probably 90% of people in like pro, like established bands. And
correct.
You might... People might not have known that, you know, from TikTok in 2020. Did 300 know that about you, or were, like, did they get to know you, or was it just like, oh, you got a hot song, let's do this, here's some money, let's go?
It was mainly that, but we did have a like a private playlist of like a, you know, maybe 8 or 9 demos, you know, of other songs that definitely made it clear I wasn't just like the I was like damn guy, you know, like.
So they knew that you had more than that.
They knew that I had more than that coming to the table. And obviously
that song, like, is great, by the way.
I mean, it is. I mean, it has taught me a lot about what makes a hit song, you know, because obviously, like any artist, I mean, this is like the most stereotypical thing to say, but it's like, I don't like that song. I don't want to play that song. You know, it's fucking stupid to me, whatever. But that's the thing, is like, I learned and realized over the course of kind of doing this, that I perceived myself in a way that was completely different than how people perceived me. And as an artist, you can't, it's actually not up to you how people perceive you and how people perceive your art. It's
even aside from art, this is just true of like life in general.
Yeah, it's true of life in general. And you generally, you know, I think of my, you know, I had thought of myself as this fucking, you know, like boundary pushing, multi-talented, forward thinking producer and songwriter making this like future of rock, like new shit. And then people are just like, Nickelback.
Or oh, you're the TikTok rapper.
Yeah, or whatever. Like, it's just,
yeah.
They thought like,
No.
Please, no. You know, they just thought of me so differently and perceived me so differently than what I thought. And part of that is also a little bit my fault because, you know, I probably leaned into some things that were getting me some clout and just virality, you know, a little bit more that weren't necessarily like completely authentic to like who I am, you know,
like
just like, I don't know, fucking being like a white trash, like Kid Rock guy.
Right.
Know? Like a early part of like my brand, like, fuck you. I smoke cigarettes and drink beer and I fucking rap about bitches. Like, you
like
know,
back when DaBaby still wore diapers.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I definitely, you know, leaned into something, I was like, all right, well, if people are going to perceive me this way anyways, I might as well fucking like go all the way, you know, and just like make it a whole fucking thing. And it worked, you know, it worked to a certain extent, but I think a big part of what this past couple of years being like new, you know, like my whole freshman kind of like saga in the music industry, you know, I am like I am a new man, you know, than when we first talked.
Yeah,
back
it seems
then.
Like it.
I it's just like I have gained such a different perspective on like what it takes and who I am. You know, that was a big thing. Is like one of the hardest parts as an artist is genuinely trying to figure out like who you are as an artist, especially for somebody like me who likes a lot of different genres, has the ability to make a lot of different genres, can do this, can do that. Like, it's like I was a big mistake I made over the past couple of years was I did everything because I could, not because I could. You know, I
meaning like different genres and stuff.
Yeah. Like, you know, one song I'm fucking rapping hyper pop, glitching my fucking vocals out and doing these crazy like metal things and all the shit. And then the next song I'm doing like an acoustic butt rock fucking ballad. Yeah. And the next song I'm doing like a fucking frat boy Beastie Boys thing. And then I'm doing a fucking Kid Rock trap Nickelback thing. And I was just all over the place.
And why do you think it sounds like you believe that was a mistake?
I do believe it was a mistake because I think that in order to, you know, if you look at all of the greatest artists, you know, throughout history, bands and artists included, you know, a great artist has a sound, you know, like,
right.
Know what a fucking Slipknot song sounds like.
They're not going to give you ska.
Yeah. you know what a fucking Migos song sounds like, or Lil Uzi, or whatever the fuck. Like, the great artists that blow up have a sound because they're doing something that only they can do. You know, it's that sound, whatever. So, you know, I failed to develop truly my sound. I experimented with a lot of different things that could turn into my sound. You know, like I could have made a whole album. I feel like I would probably be literally at least 3 or 4 times as successful and popular right now if I just made my whole entire first album like Damn the Album. And I was just like the fucking like Nickelback Kid Rock like rap. If I just like did that thing for 12 tracks and like branded it perfectly, like I guarantee I'd be like at least 4 times as popular right now.
Do you think you would have been happy doing that?
No, because I don't think that I don't think that is who I truly am and what I don't think that was is what would have truly captured me. You know, yeah. It would have been successful and I could have done it. And I am smart enough to market something like that and know, and I would know how to brand that. But like, I just don't think it wouldn't have fulfilled me. And it also would have.
Then you'd be like riffraff.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be like stuck because I would have gotten even more famous for doing something like that. And I would have been really, really fucking perceived like a certain way. You know, another way that I feel like probably the main way that I've been perceived, at least in the rock and metal community, is like the cover song remix guy.
Right. Because which is way worse.
Way worse, which also sucks, you know, but it was such a dichotomy.
I mean, those are good. I mean, I like those a lot, but you don't want to be that guy.
I don't want to be that fucking guy. Yeah. But the problem is it was so like unheard. Like I was doing something that was so like unprecedented because I wasn't just making a cover song and like putting it on you like metal cover of Taylor
Swift. Right.
Like I literally like making
one of Slipknot was pop punk.
Yeah. It wasn't that. I was literally making like a brand new interpretation of a classic rock and metal song with the original band that did
right.
So like it was so cool. And I was also getting, you know, it got me in the room with Papa Roach and Ollie and Bring Me and all these, you know, situations where I was just like a kid like on a fucking roller coaster, like holy shit, my life is fucking crazy. I'm like hanging out with fucking Oliver Sykes and Jacoby Shaddix making these remixes and stuff. And it was so cool and it was so fun. So it felt good and it felt like the right thing to do. And it was like, you know, really helping me build like a little bit of a following. But then as soon as I went and dropped, you know, you drop a original song after that, nobody cares because they're following you to see a certain thing. And you just get so defined and so pigeonholed, you know, in whatever people are perceiving. So what I learned and what I've really thought about moving forward is, okay, I need to now for this next phase and for this next album, I need to go away for a while and I need to do some soul searching and really discover who I truly am as an artist and then exclusively put that out into the world so people understand and perceive who I truly am as an artist. You know, that is what was important to me over the past like really year or so. And I feel like, I mean, I've only really dropped like, you know, one song from this new phase so far, and it's already fucking blowing, you know, it's like going to be my number one song on Spotify here pretty soon because it's moving so fast. So it's obviously working, and I feel really just good and finally like people are finally seeing like the real, I'm finally making the music that my soul like has wanted to make, you know. And it doesn't mean I'm completely getting rid of like pushing the boundaries or, you know, being a forward thinking artist at all. I'm doing actually, you know, even more of that than I ever have with most of the songs on this upcoming album. But I finally just have tapped into like making something for me and not for other people, not because I thought it was going to bring me fame or clout or it was going to make kids think I'm a cool rapper or was it going to make this thing. Like I'm just making something for me, for my soul. And I think it comes off, it's going to work that much better because it's just true and it's authentic and it's who I am.
I think maybe the stuff you were doing before, like My Sword is probably like my favorite song you've done.
That's the closest thing to what this new album sounds like.
Okay. It may be at that time, it was just maybe a little bit more than people were ready for because it's like, it's so fucking wild and just bizarre. I love it and I totally get it, but I feel like people might just not have been ready for it at that time.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, that's part of what being a forward thinking artist, you kind of comes with the territory. You know, you're going to have things that go underappreciated, you know, if you're doing something that's that outside the box, you know? So,
you just got to OD, then everyone will anoint you as a genius. I mean, it's an option.
I know.
If I don't know if it's worth it, that's your call to make. But.
Yeah, well, it's not. You know, I like my health and my clarity and my brain. So it's a good thing that it's not worth it. But that's also another perception that kind of pisses me off is like this, like, you know, fucking like, oh, troubled genius thing. Like, yeah. I'm like a relatively happy and healthy person. I have my own problems and my own emotions like anybody. But like, I feel like I definitely like have my shit together in life. And I don't think I need to be like a fucking whack job with a drug problem in order to make insane art. You know,
I mean, it probably would help to make you more marketable, unfortunately, you know, because like for real, I mean, people just love to watch a train wreck.
Yeah. I think
look at like Blueface over the last year or two.
Yeah. It's like the
he's a smart guy. He's a really, really smart guy.
Yeah.
Playing like, to some extent.
You know, it's like the crash you can't look away from. It's just like people, you know, negativity always gets more attention than positive. Yep. It just does. I don't know why. It is absolutely the way humans are wired.
I'll tell you why. I think so. There's in psychology, they study it. It's called negativity bias. And it's a real thing. And I think from an evolutionary perspective, it's because it's more important for you to remember where the saber-toothed tiger lives than how pretty the sunset was yesterday.
Yeah, the danger aspect of it. Yeah.
I think that's why.
Yep, that does make sense. I mean, and look, I'm sure I'm a fucking loud person and I have lots of opinions. I'm sure I'll probably get myself into plenty of trouble in the future.
There we go.
You know, I'm sure I'll have no problem getting attention for something else. You know, I don't need to have a drug problem on top of it. Probably.
Getting canceled is another option.
Which, you know, whatever. It seems like it just kind of happens to people no matter what you fucking do, no matter how hard you try not to. Artists not to get canceled are usually the ones that end up getting canceled anyways.
So do you think in hindsight that signing to like a rap label who sort of, I feel like a label like that, it's kind of like if you're not going to be Thug or Megan or whatever, it's kind of like, well, then you are trash.
I think that, I mean, they had like a couple of rock artists they had Water Parks when I was there, you know, and they're good, you know, they were doing well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was something to look at kind of, but
like you're such small potatoes, compared to they're big dogs,
but they were at least an independent label. So I, you know, 300 is actually just a huge independent label. They, you know, with like a big partner company or whatever. So that was something that was enticing about it, you know. And I also just on a personal level, like when I was very first signing, I really just got along with the people, you know, that
matters a lot.
The most. Yep. I felt like they understood like my vision the most and were like the most excited about it. So that was kind of the main, you know, thing that I went for in that situation. And I actually still work with my A&R who signed me, this guy named Jeff Fenster. He's awesome. He's a fucking legend in the music industry. He's done everything you wanted to do, met everyone you wanted to meet. Fucking, he's just like a legend. But he's really like outside the system now, and he came with me when I left, and so I still work with him, and he still helps me on like the back end behind the scenes shit. But so the label thing, you know, the big, you know, obviously I posted that video, and it got some attention.
So for anybody who hasn't seen it, what was the sort of gist of that video?
Yeah, the gist of that video. So I posted this video titled "Why You Should Never Sign to Record Label," and I mainly wanted to post it not just to like talk shit or whatever, like about a label or complain, because I don't feel that way. I don't like, it's not a complaining thing to me, but it was more so just to like kind of explain to like my fans and people who are still paying attention, like, why I've been like gone for a year and like haven't posted and haven't dropped any music and just kind of like fell off the face of the planet. And people are like, are you still alive? And all that type of shit, you know, it was a lot to just clarify, you know, that, but.
Because when you're signed to a label like that, you can't just put shit out when you want to, how you want to.
Yep. You cannot do that. And there's a lot that you can't do, but, it was basically just so, you know, when I first signed, obviously, I was young. I hadn't moved to LA yet. I was, you know, just getting started with everything. And I knew, you know, you hear the warnings and you think, you know, like, oh, yeah, the music industry, whatever, it sucks. It's corrupt. There's bullshit. Like, you think you get it and you understand, but you don't really understand until some shit happens to you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, like this is what people are talking about. And it's not even like the way that people think. It's like, it's not like this crazy, like evil mastermind.
Cigar smoking guy. It's like, ha ha ha.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. The guy, this is going to, yeah, he thinks he can run the show. No, it's not really like that. It's actually a lot stupider than that. Which
it's like,
is
oh, this person quit and they were my contact and now the new person doesn't give a shit about me. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just like any job. It's just like corporate bullshit. You know, that's like what it is. And it's so much of it that it's like, it's almost impossible to weave your way through it if you're not like a huge artist. So, I mean, even when you are fucking a huge artist, sure, it's like possible. But, you know, when I first signed off the backs of my virality and stuff, like it was okay. It wasn't too bad. And I liked the people I was working with for the most part. And it wasn't like horrible or anything like that. But like over time, you know, as soon as a little bit of that virality starts dipping down, as it does, you know, you don't... Yep. We can't control the algorithm. Sometimes it's in our favor. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes you're doing shit that's worth being viral that doesn't go viral. And sometimes you're doing shit that's worth being viral and it does go viral.
Yep.
You can't always fucking control what the fuck's going to happen. So,
but the label doesn't care. You know, they're like, tough shit. Figure it out.
Yeah, obviously not. So then as soon as they start seeing the smallest chink in the armor, you know, the tiniest chink in the armor, it's like, okay, well, but we don't really want you to release anything until like you got like another viral, like, the moment happening. So just why don't you just work on that? You know, why don't you just on getting us a viral moment for a while, you know, until, and then we'll maybe talk about, you know, starting a 6 week long pre-save campaign.
And what's crazy about that to me is like, well, what the fuck do you do then? If I have to make the music and I have to market it by, you know, going viral and stuff, what the fuck do you do other than get me on some playlists?
Oh yeah, they don't. I mean, they can't even guarantee that either. I mean, they don't do anything. They're a bank. That's what they do. They give you money, but then
you don't need a bunch of money for like to make your music.
No, of course not. I mean, I'm the one making all my fucking music. But me and, you know, a couple of my close friends are doing it all in our bedrooms, you know, essentially. So yeah, it's not like it's not the type of thing I need to go get money from a label and rent out a famous Hollywood studio.
Yeah, record drums for 3 months and spend $100,000. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, of course you don't need that. Of course I need, you know, it's nice to have money for music videos and, you know, to make shit. That's necessary in some type of way.
It's a very expensive bank though, is the problem.
It's a very expensive bank and it's a bank that you don't really ever pay it, like ever pay
off. Like Krayshawn, if you remember her, like she still owes them fucking $800,000.
I saw that tweet the other day.
Well, she doesn't owe them. I mean, people say she doesn't owe them, but she will not. She's $800,000 in the hole.
In the hole, yeah. But it's like, but that doesn't make any sense because if she's got like shit that's streaming, you know, whatever, tens of millions of streams, or I don't know what her music is really streaming, I haven't looked, but I assume she posted it was platinum, so I'm assuming it's like enough stream. Like that's like not no money. Like that's crazy. That's weird, you know. Yeah. And I've just accepted that like all of the music that I've dropped in the past 2 years from Damn up until fucking
I'll never make a penny off of it
or something. Like, yeah, I'll never any ever. I mean, I can make stuff publishing or whatever, you know, when it gets played on Sirius Octane and shit, and that's fine. But like all the stream money, all the music video money, like gone forever. And I have no way of verifying. I don't know if they're cooking the books. I don't know.
I mean, you can audit them if you really want to, but.
Yeah, but then it's just like, okay, what? I got to go spend tens of thousands of dollars on legal fees and all this other shit like that. It's crazy.
Spend, you know, $20,000 to potentially make 15 or something, you know?
Yeah, or I lose because they have a fucking legal team of 10 of the players ever. And I'm there trying, you know, it's like they know it's an unwinnable fight for somebody like me. So it's kind of like, it just doesn't make any sense to even try.
I still think it was smart for you to do this, though.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Like, even if it didn't necessarily work out the way that you wanted to, I mean, what's the alternative? You say no to that, you know, when you're like a kid in Oregon?
I don't you know? Regret doing it because it got me to LA. Got me, you know, I was broke. It got me some money in my pocket that I needed desperately. It gave me the ability to make music full time and work on shit, and gave me the ability to, you know, build up a little bit of a following and go on a tour and what, you know,
got on a bunch of big festivals and stuff.
Yeah, it helped launch. It absolutely helped launch. I'm not going to lie and be like, you know, there is zero positive side to signing to a label. Yeah. I still don't think that somebody should do it. I think that once you're in the position I was already in, going viral and stuff, I think that if I could go back and do it all over again, I probably would have been able to still be able, like, get enough money to move to LA and make music videos and whatever.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolates.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles, The Wrath of the Buzzard, PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Because I'd be making the money, or I could go get a distribution deal with something and not, you know, give away all the control.
You can push shit on a credit card and come out ahead versus a label.
Exactly, bro. Just fucking get a American Express card and run up $100,000 and then just watch all my, you know, fucking Damn has made $100,000 for sure.
Right.
You know, in a gold record. So it's like, you know, you just watch the I'm in anyways. So yeah, I mean, like I would have necessarily done it differently, but I also don't regret doing it because I definitely met a lot of people through doing it. It was, you know, exciting. And it was kind of like, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, your lifelong goal is to like blow up and get signed, you know, that's a thing. Yeah. And it's got this kind of romantic like connotation to it, you know, where you're just like, really, you really want to get signed, and I wanted to, and it was, you know, fucking, I'm on the phone and my mom's crying and we're just happy and we're celebrating. It's awesome. You know, it's like, it was so cool. So, you know, there was obviously some positive things that came as a side effect of me making that decision. But I mean, I think there would have been plenty of other positive things that would have still came had I just been smarter and gone a different route. But
you never know, because you didn't know then what you know now. Like, yeah, if you could go back in time, you know, in the and take all the knowledge that you have now back to 2020, maybe it would turn out differently. But that's not how it works.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, hindsight is 2020, and you can always look back and think about what you would do differently all the time. I'm sure I'm going to look back at this phase of my life and this album and probably have something I would have changed, you know, or whatever. But that's the thing, is like, you can't, art and something I've also realized about, like, you know, listening back to some of those older songs, just being like, I don't like them anymore, I don't whatever, and that's fine. But like, you know, art is a capture of a moment in time, you know, that's what it captures. And so I'll be making this album, and I'm stoked on it right now. It's like everything about it I'm like so excited about and feeling so good about. I'm sure that 5 years from now I'm going to look back and be like, I wish I would have done something a little bit different. But it doesn't matter, because the important thing is that I'm just capturing the spirit of now. You know, that's the humanity in it. You know, I read one of the things that got me kind of going on this like album, like in a really big way, was like reading Rick Rubin's new book, which I don't know if you've read that, but it's so fucking good. It's insanely good. And it's just like gold on every page. And, you know, there's like a quote. He talks a lot about this kind of idea, but there's one quote that always sticks out of my head. And he says, if your song has 3 flaws, it might not be finished. But if it has 8 flaws, it might be finished. Like, meaning that, you know, the humanity of art being captured goes much longer than it being perfect. And I would have tweaked this word, or I would have tweaked this lyric, or whatever.
I mean, you're wearing a Mayhem shirt. You know, you listen to a Mayhem recording, it sounds like absolute dog shit. And that's why it's great.
Gonna make me name three Mayhem songs now?
I only know one.
I don't even
remember the name of that one. The Moon, whatever one.
Moon.
Yeah. But I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I think, in my opinion, the biggest issue with like rock right now is just that everything is so goddamn like sterile and clean and perfect, yep. and they're trying yep. so hard, you know, to make it a marketable product, which ironically makes it less marketable.
Yeah, even the way they look. Think about the way most band members look. In these days, they all
look like fucking baristas.
Yeah, they're all super undercut with the thing and hair and the gel, whatever. And then the like super clean style and the skinny and the, you know,
or youth pastors.
They're all handsome, like, bro. Like, you know, that's not what fucking. What did, like, think about what like Jonathan Davis looked like back in the day? You know,
looks like some piece of shit you'd see at a bus stop.
That's a fucking crazy looking motherfucker, and it's, you know, because it's real. And, you know, obviously, whatever, if that's how they look, that's how they look. And that's fine. But like, I'm kind of just really tired of just seeing like the fucking clean cut white guy play the gent riff, you know, like,
I mean, just everything on Octane. I shouldn't say everything, but like 90% of stuff on Octane.
I'm on Octane, you know.
Well, that's what 90% other than Jairus Johnson. there is some good stuff on Octane, and I think what Jose does is like really cool, and I get it. But I mean, he doesn't make the music, but it's just, it's so safe, and it reminds me of like, do you remember? I don't know if you paid attention to this stuff, but like maybe 10 years ago or so, like the tail end of the like Joey Sturgis era with all the like MySpace metalcore bands all sounded exactly the fucking same. And Joey's my friend and business partner. It's not a diss on him, but everyone copying him and copying the Devil Wears Prada and Asking Alexandria and all that shit. Yeah. It's like all this shit looks and sounds exactly the fucking same. Yeah. And I feel like we're in that moment now with like sort of current, you know, whatever they play on Octane.
Yep. It absolutely does. And I'm tired of hearing it. You know, I just like, I want to, but something I was tired of hearing it back, you know, a couple of years ago when I was saying, future of rock and blah blah blah, you know, like all that type of shit. Like I was still saying it back then, but what I failed to do was capture the true essence of rock and metal music. And I thought, well, the true essence of rock and metal music is just like a fuck you attitude and stuff. But what I started realizing was that, you know, look, people are not going to see me as a rock or metal artist unless I got some shit that sounds like rock and metal in there.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that I can't be creative, push the boundaries, do different shit, blah blah blah, whatever. And something else I realized too, the one of the reasons why all of this shit that is happening now, like the Octane Core stuff and all the shit that sounds so samey, and the reason that we hate it is not only because it just all sounds the same.
Yeah.
But because it actually genuinely fails to reach the greatness that most of the actual huge rock and metal bands that came before have captured.
I don't think, like, those bands have anything to say.
They're just like,
this is what kind of song I'm supposed to write. Okay. It's like, you know, the people that write jingles for commercials or whatever. Okay. You want something that sounds like this and this key. All right. Yeah, I can bang it out.
It sounds like they're making music for a business.
Yes, in order exactly.
to make enough money to scrape by so they don't have to go work at Starbucks.
Yes. You know, and hey, listen, if that's what you want to do with your life, that's cool, but I don't want to fucking listen to it.
Yeah, it's fine. And there's people that like it and whatever too, and that's also fine. You can like whatever the fuck you want. That's not my point. My point is just that for me, somebody who rock and metal was the genre, you know, that was what spoke to me when I grew up and when I was just entering the phase of becoming an individual, you know, that, you know, wherever it is, like between 9 and 13 or something, when you're like, I'm a person.
I like this and that. And
I don't like that, whatever, you know, rock and metal and those bands, like that is what spoke to me. And the reason it spoke to me is because I was listening to all these fucking great bands that had some shit to say and do. And that was like, holy fuck. And it was so mind blowing. And so just like, I mean, I'm at, you know, I was being a 14-year-old and listening to fucking the self-titled album or Slipknot, you know, for the first time and just being like, I have never heard anything like this. This is so crazy. And it just blew my mind, you know, and like, there's just nothing mind blowing about 99% of metal bands. Now, the most mind blowing thing, I guess you could say, is like the fucking deathcore vocalist arms race that's happening.
Yeah, which to me is just so boring, and nothing against any of those bands. It's just like, okay, we did it. Like, can we do something else now?
To a demon from hell, can I sound? And it's and it's impressive. I mean, I can't fucking do that. It is.
But how many more times do we need to do it? Okay, yeah, Will Ramos is awesome and amazing, and he did it. You don't need to do it again. He did it.
Yeah. You know, we don't need more. You know, just like how the world doesn't need two Slipknots, the world doesn't need two Will Ramoses either.
Right.
You know, so like you got to do what only you can do. And that is what makes art special. And that's what makes artists and bands specials when they get like, you know, I know you're a certified System of a Down hater, but like,
disliker.
Man, disliker. There has never been before, and there will never be after, a band that sounds like them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely.
Sound so unique. It's fucking totally how weird they sound and unique they sound. And
especially for a band that mainstream.
Yeah, especially for a band that mainstream.
I mean, if you compare them to whatever obscure like avant-garde shit, yeah, it's not that weird. But for, you know, a band that has like 5 Billboard top 10 albums, yeah, it's weird as shit.
Yeah, so weird. And it's, and the reason it worked and resonates is because it's authentic, genuine, boundary pushing art that has something to say. And it was really great. It was greatness. They captured greatness. And what most bands now fail to capture is true greatness. True greatness.
Yep.
You know, like, and there's a lot of ways you can define true greatness, you know, and it's not necessarily even up to me to define true greatness because there's a lot of ways you can be truly great. But
if you look at the bands that are standing out, Sleep Token, Polyphia, Bad Omens, you know, they are doing something that is unique and different. And they do have something to say.
There's some true greatness there. There's a little bit of true greatness there. They're not all my particular thing. And, you know, they're not all the exact way that I would like to push the genre forward. But that's cool. That's fine. Because I'm going to push the genre forward the way I see it. You know, the way I perceive rock and like this album that I've been working on is truly like the Jairus perception of rock and metal. Like the Jairus interpretation of rock and metal is what this album is, and that's good because
Sevenfold.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, I knew that when I dropped this song, When the Darkness Comes, I knew that people were gonna fucking say it sound like Avenged Sevenfold. Sound like Metallica, sound like whatever. And that's fine because when you're a artist that breaks onto the scene with something that gets a lot of attention like that, people, even like, you know, whatever, Bad Omens or Sleep Token, I'm sure before, you know, when they were first breaking, people were like, oh, this reminds me of this, or this sounds like this, because people just love to throw you into whatever, something they're familiar with. You know, that's all it is.
Well, I mean, that's what they said about Hail to the King when it came out. They're like, oh, this sucks. It just sounds like Metallica, Black Album.
And now they're just saying I sound like Avenged Sevenfold. Yeah. I'm like, you guys, like, if you look at the comments on any of my fucking TikToks that have blown up about When the Darkness Comes, it's like, it's just a line of like, well, this sounds like this. Well, no. It actually sounds like this because this came before it. But no, you guys are missing this thing right here.
Do people, it drives me nuts how people get so autistic about kind of like who did it first and this and that. Like, it doesn't fucking matter, guys. If you like the song, that's the only thing that matters.
Bro, I wrote an awesome riff. Just say it's a fucking awesome riff and let's move on. You know, it's like, yeah.
That's all that matters.
Of course it's inspired by Avenged Sevenfold and Metallica. And like, duh. And I was purposefully making a riff that sounded like that. Like, it is obvious. But what I did in the song is the whole chorus of the song does something that Metallica and Avenged Sevenfold could never and would never do.
Avenged Sevenfold might do it. They haven't yet, but they do some weird shit, but
nothing's off the table for them at this point.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, that riff sounds like them, but the rest of the song doesn't.
Yeah, the rest of the song absolutely doesn't. And, you know, and then of course, and then you have people that are like, you ruined the song with the chord, that stupid trap part in the chord. Like, it should have just been a rock, you know, whatever. Oh, so then I can, you can really tell me I'm just ripping off, you know, Metallica or something? So, like, no, I wanted to do something that was my interpretation of a classic metal, you know, four on the floor thing. It wasn't just good enough for me to do that and just like, yeah, do a chorus that's just the same thing, like a Metallica chorus. Like, why would I do that? It's been done. You know, I want to do something.
I mean, you're not going to do that better than the Black Album. Nobody ever will.
Of course not. And I don't care to. But what I did care to do was go listen to the Black Album and go, what if I did my Jairus version of some shit like this? You know, what would that sound like? And I did it. And I was like, I love this. This feels like me. You know, this feels like
I agree with that.
I feel like, you know, I've been a little bit, you know, obsessed with, I kind of did the reverse. Like, I was so obsessed with like the future, like, how do I make something sound like the future? And then something when I kind of really realized about this like greatness thing, and like the reason that most of these bands are so boring now is not because they're not like necessarily adding, you know, it's not because they're not adding an 808 into their fucking shit. It's because they're just not making anything great. That's really what. And so I started looking back and listening back to older shit, listening back to all the event when I was first getting into metal, like, you know, fucking Nightmare or self-titled album or whatever. And like listening to those albums and being like, what was the greatness that I felt from this? And how do I use that as inspiration and capture that and move it forward in my own way? And that was what I really focused on. So ironically enough, you know, the future of rock guy kind of in the past year, I've really actually been listening to a lot of old shit and trying to really feel and understand what it's like to make something truly great, because I can't listen to shit now that's truly great because it's
doesn't exist.
Doesn't really exist. Yeah. You know, like we've said, there's a couple people that are really just now starting to fucking come into their own and start making shit that's truly great and stuff. But, you know, it's up until this point, you know, it's kind of like been pretty dry. So yeah, it's just been a big journey and a big kind of reversal of my interpretation of rock and metal in the way that, like, I realize that it's not because they need to add more electronics into rock and metal. It's because we need to make something that's truly great again. Yeah. And of course,
which may have 808s in it or may not.
Yeah, of course, part of something being truly great is its boundary pushing in its own way and its unique. Okay, that is part of something being great.
But you could just make a great rock song with, you know, guitars, bass, drums, and vocals.
And I have songs on this album that don't have electronics in it.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
I do have a couple songs like that.
So do you think, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
You mentioned something earlier about, you know, saying that basically that rock fans were not going to accept you as a rock artist making the music you were making before, which I agree with that. And do you, so it almost feels like you're kind of saying like, all right, I'll throw you a bone. Here's some guitars. Is there anything to that? Because it's true. Like they hate, even now they hate 808s. They hate, you know, quote unquote auto tune. You know, there's certain things that if you do it, rock fans are just not going to be into it.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I think there is a little bit of me kind of going like, all right, it's actually really this. I'll put it this way. It's really like me going, okay, motherfuckers, you want to hear me make a rock and metal album? I'll show you how a fucking real artist makes a rock and metal album.
This is the story of Whitney Houston.
This is the story of Kurt Cobain.
Of George Michael, of Otis Redding, of Amy Winehouse, of Michael Hutchence, Bob Marley. This is the story of Prince.
It's a new podcast series
about how they died, why they died, and why we're still talking about them so long after.
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
It's storytelling.
But it's more than that, because rock stars,
they tell us how we feel. They change our mood.
They change the clothes we wear, the people we hang out with,
the way we remember things.
It's them who give us those ludicrous moments, the ones where you're
jumping around, singing your heart out, feeling understood.
And it's those moments we'll help you remember, the ones you're thinking about right now.
That feeling.
That feeling.
It's coming soon from Crowd Network.
Just search for Death of a Rockstar on your podcast app
and subscribe now.
That's the challenge that I've wanted to rise to. It's like, I want to make all of these fucking bands look silly right now and make it look like they're not even trying, because I can do rock and metal better than they can. And that is what I want. That's the challenge I wanted to rise to, is I wanted to show rock and metal fans, like, look, you guys want to hear me do a rock and metal album? I'm going to show you what the fuck a real rock and metal album sounds like. What a real boundary pushing rock and metal album that rises to the greatness that I feel like the genre deserves. And in doing that, look, yes, I'm throwing them a bone, but there is absolutely going to be rock and metal fans that fucking hate this album. There absolutely will be. You know, not every song is as friendly to rock and metal fans is When the Darkness Comes is. I'll just say that right now. There's definitely some shit on there that's going to challenge their brain to a degree it has not been challenged in a long time. But I think it does. I've kind of given what I had to do was, especially because I also wanted, back to my earlier point where because I can do everything I should, like, What I really did with this album going into this is I've decided to give myself a limited toolbox, like a sandbox with a few tools in it. And I have to be as creative and interesting and me with these tools in the toolbox. That's what I have to do. I see there's other tools out there and I will usually want to gravitate towards those tools, and I could, and it would be awesome, but I want to make an album that's cohesive front to back, that has a sound, that has a brand, that has an identity, that has a message. I want to do that. I want to make a fucking actual album that's a fucking statement. And in order to do that, I've had to limit myself with a certain set of tools, and I can only use those tools. And yes, a couple of those tools are like live drums and guitar in every song. Got to happen. I can do anything else. I can go as crazy as I want, but there's got to be live metal and rock and metal drums and guitar in every song, some type of way. So that was like a tool that I had to use. And, you know, it was just kind of about that, was just about giving myself the boundaries of a certain thing that I have to work in. And I could usually go out here, or I could go over here, but I have to challenge myself to get as creative as possible with these tools and only these tools. And I can't wait for people to kind of grasp the whole picture, you know, of what I have going on. Each single that I drop, like I said, When the Darkness Comes is really like the first single from this album. And I'm going to
Is it done now or still working on it?
It's probably 70 to 75% done. And then of course there's like, you know, a bunch of mixing and mastering stuff that has to happen as well, but it's pretty well put together. I know the 16 songs that are going to be on it. So that part's done. But yeah, it's getting there, and I'll probably do like, you know, a handful of extra singles. I got another single, the other one I sent you before, Ode to Metal. That was dropping on December 1st. So that'll be like the next follow. You know, I'm very curious to see, like, because it does such a good job. That song does such a good job of like, kind of, all right, When the Darkness Comes kind of gives you a peek into what I'm doing. But like, yeah. Oh, wait, like, Jairus hasn't given up on being crazy either, you know, right. Like it is fucking crazy. So I'm excited to kind of put that out and give people like some more insight into like what's actually going on here, you know, on this album. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it must feel good to be able to like put stuff out again and not be in a holding pattern.
Yes, it absolutely does. And it's so fun too, because, you know, it's doing so well. It's like, what are we, like 2 or 3 weeks into the release? It already has a million streams. It's got 500,000 views on YouTube. And it's like, it's not even just like, you know, it's like, it's got 500,000 views on YouTube and the comments are like over 1,000 comments, which, you know, like that's good engagement. Yeah. That's like a high level of engagement. So it's like, it's just, it feels good to like have a win right away. It's like the first song, the first one back. A fucking win. Take Me Away, you know, I dropped that, but that was really more of like a, you know, a little bit of like a warm appetizer, kind of. Didn't really have like a real music video or like a real thing. It was just kind of like, hey guys, I'm doing rock and metal now, kind of, you know. But When the Darkness Comes really like the first true like unveiling of the new project, kind of. And to have it win and do so well so early, and have me be, I'm not on a label. Nobody can take that away from me. Fuck you motherfuckers. I'm independent and I'm already fucking crushing. Like, that just goes to show you, like, the first song that I've dropped independent is doing better than the last fucking 10 songs I dropped on a label.
Yeah, that's amazing. I actually didn't realize it was doing that well, but that's amazing, because it certainly wouldn't feel, I mean, you know, if this kind of stumbled out of the gate, you'd probably just be like, well, all right, you know, I gotta rebuild. But it's gotta just feel amazing to have a win out of the gate.
Absolutely does. It really does feel amazing. And I've had, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, dudes like Ronnie Radke and stuff, hit me up and just be like, bro, song's fucking awesome. Post it on his story, share it, like all that type of shit. Like getting the cosign from the, you know, people texting me and be like, bro, this shit is on like another level. Like this is going to go off. This is going to fucking pop off. And like, just to have it do that well right away, like, it's so good. It's going to go to radio. They're doing a radio push, already getting spun on and a bunch. It just feels so good. And I'm just so, I feel like it's just the universe being like, hey, bro, like, you made the right call. You know, you did the right thing. This is going to work. You know, this is going to fucking work. So, yeah, and if it didn't do well, then, you know, whatever. I wouldn't kill myself over it. It'd just be like, all right, I believe in the project as a whole, that like, it's the kind of thing too, that like, people aren't going to understand based off one song. It's going to take time to build, you know. You're going to understand what I'm doing by the time you've heard 4 singles and I drop the album, and you look at the album cover and you see all the music videos and you hear the lyrics and you listen to all the songs. You're going to be like, oh, he's doing.
He likes Skyrim.
Yes. He likes Skyrim or whatever. Like, yeah, it's going to be very obvious to people what my brand is. And then people, you know, will be able to say like, oh, have you heard of Jairus Johnson? He does.
Exactly.
This, like, metal, it's like metal mixed with fantasy shit, mixed with like hip hop shit, and like all together. And it's really easy to describe. Whereas like before, it's like, oh, well, he kind of does like weird like butt rock stuff. And then he does like these like covers and remixes. And then he kind of does like these ballads. And then he does this like weird like hyper pop stuff. And then it's like, it was just like impossible to describe to anybody.
Which I appreciate, but unless you're like Mr. Bungle and you really hang your hat on just being
insane, that,
you know. Yeah, yeah, and you have a front man who's in like a super famous band to sort of carry it, you know. Yep. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, so this is so, it just like, I couldn't feel more like I'm on the right path, you know, and to have the song do so well and, you know, be like working so well, and just like the fact that it's already going to go to like my number one song on my Spotify, like as a brand new song, is like just so awesome. And it just feels so good. Like, yes. And this is really like the first song that I feel like people are truly like, you know, I'm kind of just like being myself, you know, I'm just like, I'm being the artist and the musician. That's just me. You know, it's not like me being like saying fuck you and wearing ski goggles and like, and everybody. It's just like, I'm just being me and I'm just making the music that I wanted to make. And to your question earlier as well, like about if I was just throwing rock and metal fans a bone, it was also really like the, like, I feel like I'm kind of making an album for my 14-year-old self that first got into rock and metal, you know? And because of that, I wanted to make shit that sounded like rock and metal with live drums and guitars and stuff, because that's what my 14 or 15-year-old self would have wanted to hear. You know, of course I also would have wanted to hear the crazy shit too, because I had the same kind of taste as that back then as I do now in a way, but, yeah, that was another reason why I wanted to go this route with everything. But anyways, yeah, it just feels great. And it feels so good that people are like acknowledging it and just like that it's had a little bit of a moment. And it's just going to keep growing and people are just going to keep understanding more and more like who I really am. And it just feels like it's going to work.
Cool. Well, that sounds like a good place to leave it. As always, appreciate your time. Always good to talk to you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.